When we talk about architecture, what do you think about? Modern glass designs like the Shard, or perhaps historical architecture like St. Paul's Cathedral? Well, we're talking a little bit about design, but what if you have a visual impairment? Can you get involved in architecture as a designer? Can you influence architects in their design? Now, Zoe Partington is with us to discuss this a little bit further. Zoe, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Zoe, architecture is a hugely visual vocation when it comes to designing something. I probably couldn't tell you if I've ever heard of someone who's blind or partially sighted being involved in design at all. Is that unusual?
There are two or three blind architects that I know about. You know, one in America, Chris Downey, and Carlos, who we worked with recently in Portugal.
In the grand scheme of things, though, that's not many architects when you consider how many are out there designing our buildings, our city and townscapes and so on. Is there a way that could be improved?
Yes, yeah, no, there is. And I think there's a lot more blind and partially sighted artists now that have insights, if you like, into designing spaces, moving through spaces and thinking about that quite creatively. What we've had really over the last 20 to 30 years, we've had people talking about accessible architecture and looking at how new builds would include blind and partially sighted people, and so that they would, that the buildings would make sense to you or the environments would make sense to you. And a lot of those people have been access auditors. A lot of those people are still sighted people, but some have been blind and partially sighted. And I was one of those people. I used to work for something called the Joint Mobility Unit that used to be based at RMIB. Really around the time when the Disability Discrimination Act came into force, it was to start to look at how you could encourage the built environment to start to change. But one of the issues has always been that Document Part M, the building regs, doesn't include sensory access. Still one of those things that's not on the agenda as much as it should be.
When you think about disability, you probably just think about ramps and wide doors. It's more perhaps physically moving around a building rather than aiding someone with a sensory impairment?
Yes, I mean, that is really true. And that symbol of the wheelchair user has been very prominent, so it's been something that's been thought about. But I think one of the things for blind and partially sighted people is that as new buildings have started to think about level access, you know, lifts, parking facilities, all of that, sometimes those buildings are also introducing things which are barriers to blind and partially sighted people. So even though they are fully accessible, sometimes they use lighting or reflective surfaces or glass or steel, things that actually can disorientate blind and partially sighted people, and particularly older people, I think, in those spaces and environments.
Are there places then in the UK that are looking at this from, say, you know, an educational point of view, you know, for architects way back at the start where they're learning their trade, if you like?
Disordinary architecture. We've been working with architectural students in different universities across the UK, and people tend to look at sensory access to a degree, but it's still, I think, it's still looked at as a, you know, as an add-on, as an adaptation about how you might change the environment, rather than thinking about how would you design something from the very beginning and making sure that, you know, colour and contrast was built into that, tactile or textured things were built into that so people could make sense of wayfinding in spaces using colour and contrast in effective ways. So it's not until you start having the conversations with those architecture students that they start to think about how would I build that in into everything that I'm doing so it makes sense not only to blind and partially sighted people, but to other users as well.
And that work, Zoe, some of that has taken place at the Bartlett School of Architecture at UCL. How did that work?
That was myself and Joss Boyce have been working with these architectural schools for quite some time. We've been developing our work. Joss has written two books, which are brilliant, around doing disability differently, and a new book called The Reader. You know, tutors and students are starting to see things like that. But also we're sort of now, you know, we email the deans of these schools and different people to try and get them engaged in what we're doing. And the Dean Allen at the Bartlett School of Architecture met a blind architect who is Carlos from Portugal. And he actually came back to us and said it must be possible to have blind architects trained through our architecture school. And it must be possible to try and reinterpret how people think about architecture. So it's not only visual. They don't necessarily think about model making from the start or about that journey through the space. But he came to myself and to Joss to ask us if we could help look at this process. And because of that, we ran a three-day course with blind and partially sighted artists with the Bartlett School of Architecture staff to try and think about what would that really mean if we had blind architects, you know, going on to the undergraduate courses to start changing that environment, not only from the perspective of the blind student being able to access those courses, but how would the whole institution change its practice and its cultural ways of working to make sure that blind people are at the centre of all of that thinking and designing.
That's a real pertinent point, because we've obviously mentioned briefly, you know, buildings which perhaps don't take sensory impairment into consideration, you know, what makes something accessible. But actually making the courses themselves accessible for people with visual impairments to get more involved in architecture, you know, that's probably something which I hadn't thought of.
I'm very aware that blind and partially sighted people can be involved in architecture and the design of those spaces. And actually, I'm so aware that, you know, in many ways, if blind people were involved, environments could probably be designed in a much better way and, you know, be more creative environments for everybody. And I think what we tend to look at is when we think about blind and partially sighted people, we think about people with a loss, so we think about sight loss. We don't think about the fact that their perspective may be incredibly valuable, and actually they may be more perceptive than somebody with sight. When we've been talking to the Bartlett School of Architecture, and they really understand this and they want to drive this forward. So I think in many ways this is unique. You know, this could be a unique programme worldwide. But it's really fascinating to begin to see, you know, disabled people have incredible values that are underestimated, not utilised. Within society now, we're ready to see, you know, a switch, I think, and for people to be at the core of everything.
With modern technology, smart technology becoming more accessible, I suppose the tools are there really for someone with a visual impairment to really, you know, take up the gauntlet, if you like, and become architects and designers and build this in from the start.
Yeah, I think that is definitely the case, because I know a blind person could create a model. Models can now be scanned and then, you know, basically programmed and transferred to the computer. The computer can work out all the dimensions, and then a new model or a 3D printed model can come out at the other end. What tools does a blind person need to translate the things that are in their head about designing a space to sighted people? And how do sighted people translate back to blind or partially sighted people those spaces? And I think for different blind or partially sighted people, that can work, you know, through model making, through tactile diagrams, through conversations, through discussion, through discourse. And I think one of the things that, you know, is really important, architects or architectural firms, they have teams of people that work on different facets. So in a sense, a blind person could be working in a particular area that is really relevant to them and to everybody else. I think if you're the designer and you've got the idea, it's how is that then translated, and other people may well to take that process to the next level. You don't have to have sight to be able to do that.
So what's the next step, Zoe? How do we grow that opportunity to create, you know, the next blind Norman Foster, if you like?
One of the things we're doing is we're looking at putting on a summer programme next year at the Bartlett School of Architecture to start really trying to identify young people and even people that are already in careers to think about architecture as a career and a profession. And then once we've run that programme out and really begun to look at the issues that the Bartlett School needs to take on board, it's then looking at how we might have a one-year access course to get people really into the system. And then after that one-year access course, onto the architectural programmes so that things can begin to really change. I mean, I'm involved because I'm partially sighted, but I also am very aware of how everybody needs to be up to date to make sure that blind people have a really fantastic journey through those architecture schools. Because one of the other things that we really need to remember is, outside of the architecture school, once you go into the workplace, how do we get all of those, all of the built environment sector to understand that having a blind person on your team could be incredibly valuable? And how do they begin to change their practices to enable that to happen?
It sounds like a very exciting opportunity, Zoe, and you know, small steps at the beginning of what could be a great journey for design and for architecture as well. If people would like to learn more about some of the topics we've been discussing, what's the best way for them to do that?
I think the best way is to email myself and Josh Boyce, and the email address is disordinaryarchitecture@gmail.com.
And let's hope many more people do. But for the moment, Zoe, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Alan.